Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
241-0. How'd you like to play that game? How'd you like to be the one sitting at zero?
When 241 votes have been cast against you.
It's not a close vote. It's not a divided department.
When the Pima County Deputies organization put the question to its membership, confidence or no confidence in Sheriff Chris Nanos, every member who cast a ballot voted no confidence and resign.
And resign. Not just, we don't like you. Go do what you will with this information, because clearly you haven't the last time we voted. Now we're going to put it out there. No confidence and resign. We're telling you with our vote what we'd like you to do.
241 deputies, 65 abstained. Not one person voted to keep him and continue. Zero. These are the investigators, the detectives, the people inside that building every single day running the most high-profile missing persons case in this country, and they have unanimously told you they don't trust the man in charge.
That alone should be the story.
But the deputy's vote isn't actually the thing that moved the needle. What moved the needle happens next. The Pima County Board of Supervisors went into closed session for nearly 3 hours. When they came back out, they voted unanimously to invoke a state statute, an old territorial era law, rarely used, occasionally dusted off for when a county government decides it's had enough, requiring Sheriff Nanos to submit sworn statements about his conduct and his department. Then Supervisor Matt Hines, the Democrat, who put the item on the agenda, said out loud what a lot of people have been circling around. Nanos' 42-year career in Pima County, quote, seems to be based on fraud. And then he added the line that gave this some real teeth. If Nanos refuses to comply with the board's order, the board can move to remove him from office. Not censure, not a strongly worded letter, remove him. That's the mechanism. That's live right now. And Nanos' own lawyers know exactly what it means, because within hours of that vote, his office released a statement. The sheriff will comply with the statute. He will provide the report. So how did we get here? How does the sheriff of one of the largest counties in Arizona, a man who just won re-election 16 months ago, end up with his own department voting 241-0 against him, and his supervisors invoking a law from the territorial area to put him under oath? Well, the short answer involves a filing cabinet in El Paso, Texas, that said, untouched for over four decades. And if you followed our earlier reporting on Nanos's El Paso record, you know the broad outlines. 8 suspensions, 37 days without pay, 26 allegations over 6 years, a robbery suspect who ended up in the intensive care unit, a grand jury, and a forced choice in August of 1982. Resign or be fired. He resigned. He was 26 years old. He came to Tucson 2 years ago, or 2 years later, listed El Paso on his resume with a departure date 2 years later than the record show. So he lied on his resume and built a career inside a department that had no idea what was sitting in a filing cabinet back in Texas. Again, it's the 80s. There's no computers looking these things up. There's no cross-referencing. There still isn't today in most cases. People relied on each other's words and apparently didn't do a whole lot of cross-referencing either. Supervisor Hines framing is blunt. If the foundation was fraudulent, the 42 years built on top of it are, in his words, fruit of a poison tree. Now, look, the implications of this are rather large. 42 years as a sheriff. There's a lot of cases that have come and gone through that department in 42 years that he was involved in. That's a lot of cases that are going to have a second, much closer look done at them. And they're going to try and argue, well, if he shouldn't have been there in the first place, how can my client be guilty, Your Honor? Now, that ain't going to go very far in most cases, but I can guarantee there's going to be a handful that are going to get a good second look that maybe otherwise wouldn't. And that's probably a good thing. What's new and what changes the stakes considerably is the deposition. In December of last year, Nano sat down for a sworn deposition in a federal lawsuit filed by his own union president. At some point during that six-hour session, an attorney asked him a direct question he had not been asked before in this sort of a setting. Had he ever been suspended during his law enforcement career? His answer, no. He later said, after the Arizona Republic published the El Paso records, that he interpreted the question as referring only to his time in Pima County. Even though the question clearly stated, in your law enforcement career, remember we had this problem a couple weeks ago, Nanos, where you weren't really used to people questioning you or having to be accurate with the words that came out of your mouth that seemed like a really, you know, elusive thing to you. Well, we've already gone down that road, so you already know. People are holding you accountable. You're doing a deposition in your law enforcement career. There really isn't a lot of room for misunderstanding or misinterpreting unless you're just a fucking idiot, which you kind of are, it seems. When they asked me the question, he told the Tucson columnist, I'm thinking of right here in Pima County, 42 years back. He added that he told the attorneys throughout the deposition to rely on documentation rather than his memory because the records would be more accurate than his recollection. So you forgot all about all those reasons 42 years ago why you were not fired, but you quit on your own accord in lieu of firing. You tend to remember those sort of things. I mean, if you don't, let me go back to what I just said earlier, the effing idiot thing. I guess both can be true. You can decide what you think about that explanation. Rely on the record, okay? How about don't blatantly lie? Or if you don't know, say you don't know. You don't give absolutes when you don't know. This is how people like this try to get away with shit. They try to confuse you, try to confuse the process, try to make you second guess. Well, maybe I'm wrong for asking the question that way. If I did it this way, maybe I would have gotten a different... It's my fault for you lying in a deposition. No, it's not. It's yours, Chris Nanos, and you failed and you were caught and now you need to face the consequences. What Supervisor Hines thinks of it is not ambiguous. I was very surprised, Hines says, and I was even more surprised that the revelation wasn't followed by his immediate resignation. This is disqualifying for any county employee, but especially for one in law enforcement. We could be forced to reopen every case he's ever contributed to during his entire career at Pima County. This is what happens when you put egotistical, narcissistic maniacs in power.
And go, he seems like a guy I like to have a beer with.
Yeah. The Unabomber would also be an interesting guy to have a beer with. Would I do it? No. He's also publicly raised questions as to whether Nanos misrepresented his history in sworn testimony, a question that the board's attorney are now specifically tasked with examining. Which brings us to the trap hidden inside all of this, and it cuts in a direction that most people haven't gotten to yet. The state statute the board invoked has a specific and narrow trigger. A county board can move to remove an officer who refuses to appear before them or refuses to submit the required sworn statement. That's the lever. That's where the removal power lives. And Nanos, or more precisely, whoever is advising Nanos, read that statute and gave the only answer that keeps him in his chair. I'll comply. I'm not refusing. I'll do it. If he shows up, submits a sworn report, and answers the board's question, even unconvincingly, even with explanation that supervisors don't buy for a second, the removal mechanism under this statute may not apply anymore. The county is already paying outside attorneys to figure out exactly what the board can do if he complies, but his answers don't hold up. There's a parallel court case working through a related question in Maricopa County right now involving County Recorder Justin Heap. Nobody has a clean answer yet. The board's outside counsel comes back on April 7th with the specific questions they intend to put to Nanos. That's when we find out whether this instrument is actually sharp or whether compliance alone is enough to defuse it. The recall is a separate track, and it's a steep one. More than 122,000 valid signatures needed with a hard deadline. The effort is being led by a Republican congressional candidate, which means it's already carrying a partisan framing in a county that went Democrat in the last sheriff's race by 481 votes. And this week, the recall campaign didn't yet have a website. That's not the organizational infrastructure of a campaign that's about to collect six figures in a verified signature contest against a hard deadline. So here's the math as it actually stands. The deputies have abandoned him unanimously. The supervisors have called his career fraudulent and invoked a territorial era law to put him under oath. His defense of his deposition answer that he was thinking only of Pima County is now a matter of public record. And the question of whether that defense holds legally is now in the hands of outside counsel. The recall needs mass mobilization in a county of nearly a million people with limited organizational backing and a ticking clock. And the board's next move depends entirely on what its lawyers tell them they can actually do with a sheriff who says yes. April 7th, that's the next date. That's when the board hears what its attorneys have drafted. That's when we find out whether the language they invoke has real consequences or whether it's a mechanism with a compliance escape hatch built into it. And while all of that grinds forward, a family is still waiting. Nancy Guthrie has been missing since the 1st of February. No arrest, no publicly identified suspect. The sheriff running her case is preparing a sworn statement to preserve his own position. The machinery of accountability is moving slowly. And in the meantime, somebody out there knows what happened to an 84-year-old woman who didn't make it to church. And they haven't said a word. That's where things stand in Pima County. The pressure is real. The tools exist. Whether any of them land is a different question entirely. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue it there. You know those folks who just don't know how to take a damn cue? He's clearly one of them. Can you imagine if you're the leader of an organization, any organization, whatever it may be, you're a boss, you have people under you in some way, shape, or form, and every single one of them, they think you're full of shit. They think they're no confidence in you whatsoever. They're voting against you. Not one person is standing up going, maybe he's misunderstood. Maybe he just, you know, he does things a little different. Not one. Everybody wants you gone. Why would you even stay? What point are you going to make? You're not going to turn. You're not going to get them to come back around and go, oh, we were wrong. Call it a day. You're getting up there too. Dude, go enjoy your retirement. Consider yourself lucky that for 42 years you bamboozled Pima County on your previous record and got away with it. Go retire. And let the only people who have to deal with your bullshit be the ones that are at the drive-through coffee bar that you hit up in the morning. Made you your regular today, Chris. That's not what I want. I want, like, well, you've been getting the same one for the last 7 days. We just thought we'd be nice. I want, you know, who the fuck knows? Go take your torment and control and chaos and lies and delusions and narcissism into retirement. Go be a Walmart greeter. Go do something you're more qualified for, because I'll tell you what, being sheriff ain't one of them. And 42 years have proven that. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue with there. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts so you don't miss any of our episodes. Wherever you go, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, we are there. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Right now, do it real quick so you don't miss it, and take us with you. We'll keep watching this. We'll continue our conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
More than 500 people filled a church in the Catalina foothills on a Wednesday night. Some of them drove from Phoenix. Some of them had never met Nancy Guthrie. They lit candles, placed them on an altar, and prayed for a woman whose name most of the country had only learned 48 hours earlier. But the people inside that church weren't praying for a headline. They weren't praying for a case number or a missing poster or the mother of a famous television anchor. They were praying for Nancy, the woman who showed up to St. Anthony's Presbyterian every Sunday for 30 years. The woman who made committee meetings fun. The woman who laughed about javelins eating her garden. The general public learned Nancy Guthrie's name because of a crime. Tucson has known her name for more than five decades. And the distance between those two versions of Nancy, the one in the news, all the alerts, all the headlines, and the one in the hearts of the people who love her, is the entire point of this video. Because Nancy Guthrie is not a case file. She is a life. And it's a life worth knowing. Nancy Ellen Long was born on January 27th, 1942, in Fort Wright, Kentucky, at a small city in Kenton County, just across the Ohio River from Cincinnati. She grew up Catholic, St. Agnes Elementary, then Notre Dame Academy, an all-girls school. She graduated from Notre Dame Academy in 1959 and headed to the University of Kentucky, where she did something that would feel familiar to anyone who knows her family's story. She became a journalist. Nancy worked for the Kentucky Colonel, the university's student-run newspaper, as the society editor. She covered Greek life. She maintained a column. She was in the newsroom at least 3 days a week. Her editor at the Colonel, a man named Jack Guthrie, no relation, remembered her decades later. He described her as a skilled writer, friendly, polite, someone who did her job well and did it consistently. This was the early 1960s. Nancy Long was building a foundation that none of them knew would echo forward into the career of one of the most recognizable broadcast journalists in America. But we'll get there. First, there was a basketball game. a blind date at a University of Kentucky game, to be specific. A young man walked up to the door of Nancy's sorority, and she looked at him and said to whoever was standing next to her, "That's the man I'm going to marry." His name was Charles Errol Guthrie. He was a Georgia Tech graduate, a mining engineer from Pineville, Kentucky. And Nancy was right. They married on December 28, 1963, according to their wedding announcement in the Cincinnati Inquirer. That one moment tells you everything about who Nancy Guthrie is. Decisive, clear-eyed, unafraid to say what she sees. She saw her future walk up to a door, and she claimed it out loud before he even opened his mouth. That's not a woman who waits for life to happen to her. That's a woman who walks towards it. Charles' career took them around the world. His work as a mining engineer landed them in Melbourne, Australia, the suburb of Beaumaris, where their youngest child, Savannah, was born on December 27, 1971. Nancy was a full-time mother by then, raising three children, Cameron, Annie, and Savannah. When Savannah was two, the family left Australia and settled in Tucson, Arizona, moving into a burnt adobe home in the Catalina foothills near Campbell Avenue and Skyline Drive. The desert became home. Nancy would live in that house for more than 50 years, and look at what she built inside it. Cameron became the fighter pilot in the Air National Guard. Annie became a poet, a jeweler, and a teacher at the University of Arizona Poetry Center. She's published a book on the craft of jewelry and had her work appear in literary journals. And Savannah became one of the most watched morning television anchors in America, co-hosting the Today Show, graduating cum laude from the University of Arizona with a journalism degree, earning a law degree from Georgetown, mega cum laude, and scoring first on the Arizona bar exam. When Savannah talks about how she ended up in journalism, she points to one person, her mother. Nancy encouraged her to study it. Nancy planted the seed. No network did that. No producer, no agent. Nancy did that. In a house in the desert, raising her children with intention and presence and a clarity about who they could become. That is a legacy that existed long before a single camera was ever pointed at any of them. And then on June 10th, 1988, everything stopped. Charles Guthrie died of a heart attack during a work trip to Mexico. He was 49 years old. Nancy was 46. Savannah was 16, about to start her senior year of high school. One morning, the family had a father, a husband, a future built around a man who was tall and affectionate and funny, who demanded moral clarity in a way that could be intimidating, but who could also turn a mundane trip to the post office into a story worth telling. And the next morning, he was gone. Savannah has talked about those early days. She remembers hearing her mother crying before dawn in the quiet hours when Nancy thought her children were still asleep. She remembers the grief being enormous and sudden and disorienting. But she also remembers something else. She remembers what Nancy said to her children in those first raw, unsteady days after Charles died. Nancy had read it in a book that meant a lot to her in her grief, and she repeated it like a compass heading. You have to get up and decide and do. Just decide and do. That wasn't a slogan. That was a survival strategy, and Nancy lived it. She had three children to raise. She had her own aging mother to care for. She had a brother with Down syndrome who needed her, and she was doing all of it alone at 46 after spending nearly two decades as a full-time mother. She had no career to fall back on. She had no professional network waiting to catch her. She had a family that needed her to stand up, and she stood up. Nancy went to work at the University of Arizona. She took a position, starting as a clerk, by some accounts, or in public relations, depending on the source, specifically so that her daughters, Savannah and Annie, could attend the university tuition-free as children of an employee. That was the calculation. That was the math of a mother who had just lost everything and immediately started building something new so her children wouldn't lose anything more. She didn't just show up for a paycheck. She built a career. She became the spokeswoman for the University Medical Center. She created something called the Center Stage Program, a series of monthly lunchtime musical performances at the hospital, bringing in musicians from the university and beyond to play for staff, patients, and visitors. Think about that. A woman processing the worst grief of her life, walking into a hospital every day and deciding that what the people inside needed was music. That's not someone surviving. That's someone still giving. Nancy Rose, to associate to the vice president of university advancement, she coordinated efforts to help the university's department, which were, by her colleagues' account, doing great work in isolation. Broaden their reach and tell their stories beyond their own walls. She led committee meetings that people actually looked forward to attending. Elizabeth Irvin, a retired vice provost at the University of Arizona, said Nancy kept those meetings upbeat and fun. Irvin said, "You never would have guessed this woman was in the early years of a brand new career born out of the worst chapter of her life." A former reporter who covered healthcare for local Tucson papers and interacted regularly with the PR team at the medical center called Nancy level-headed, accommodating, gracious, and completely upfront. In 2000, Nancy was elected president of the Southern Arizona chapter of the Public Relations Society of America. She worked at the university from 1990 until January 1st of 2007, nearly 17 years. Meanwhile, something quieter was happening back at the house in the Catalina foothills. Savannah and Annie both attended the University of Arizona, had made an unspoken pact between them. Even though they were college students, one of them would always stay home on a weekend night so their mother wouldn't be alone. Nancy never asked for that. She never put that expectation on them. They just did it. Savannah talked about it years later, calling it something they did together as sisters. It tells you everything about the kind of loyalty Nancy inspired. Not by demanding it, not by guilting anyone into it, but by being the kind of mother whose presence you didn't want to leave empty. In the decades after Charles' death, Nancy became more than a woman or the woman who held her family together. She became the center of a community. She was a devoted member of St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church in Tucson, a congregant for 30 years, according to her pastor, John Tittle. Her attendance was so consistent, so reliable, that when she didn't show up for a service virtually on Sunday, February 1st, 2026, a church friend immediately called the family. That's not what happens when a casual attendee misses a week. That's what happens when the people around you know your rhythms because you've shown up for them every single week for 3 decades. Friends and community members have described Nancy the same way over and over. Sally Charmel, a family friend of more than 30 years and a former KVOA reporter who once worked alongside Savannah, called the Guthries a very revered family in Tucson and said what was happening was absolutely heart-wrenching. Former colleagues from the university talked about her warmth and professionalism. Her pastor prayed for her from the same pulpit where she sat every Sunday. And she was a grandmother. Savannah's children, Vale, now 11, and Charlie 9 and Annie's son all had Nancy in their lives in that close, consistent, present way that only happens when a grandmother refuses to be distant. Savannah said Nancy was so good at playing with them. She used the word spunky. Al Roker, Savannah's Today Show colleagues, described Nancy as having a wicked sense of humor. Savannah called her whip smart, funny, full of integrity and wisdom, and always up for something fun. In 2012, when Nancy turned 70, Savannah said publicly that her mother inspires everyone who knows her and has the best sense of adventure. In 2015, Nancy traveled back to Melbourne, Australia with Savannah. They visited the hospital where Savannah was born and the house where the family had once lived. Nancy looked around at the country she hadn't seen in more than 4 decades and said with quiet wonder that she never thought she'd see Australia again. They packed the whole trip into 3 days. In November 25, Nancy appeared alongside Savannah and Annie in a Today segment filmed in Tucson. They sat together at El Charo, the oldest family-owned Mexican restaurant in America, sharing lunch and a few sips of tequila. Savannah asked her mother what made her want to put down roots in Tucson all those years ago, and Nancy smiled. She said the quality of life was laid back and gentle, and then laughing, she added, "I like to watch the javelins eat my plants." That was Nancy. That is Nancy. A woman who saw a man at a sorority door in Kentucky and knew her life was about to start. A woman who buried that man 25 years later and somehow found the strength to tell her children to get up and decide to do. A woman who took care of her kids, her mother, her brother, and then built a career from nothing so her daughters could go to college. A woman who brought music into a hospital because she understood that people in hard places still need beauty. A woman who stayed in the same house for 50 years because she still felt her husband in the walls. A woman whose church knew her so well that one missed Sunday was enough to sound the alarm. Savannah said it best in a tribute for Nancy's 80th birthday. She said her mother met unthinkable challenges with grit, without self-pity, with determination, and always with unshakable faith. She said Nancy loved her family fiercely and that her selflessness, her sacrifice, her steadfastness, and her unmovable confidence were the reason any of them grew up to do anything. The world is searching for Nancy Guthrie, but I want you to understand who they're searching for. Not a victim, not a statistic, not a name on a poster. They're searching for the woman who decided and did. The woman who rebuilt everything. The woman who was still laughing about javelins 3 months before she was taken from the home she loved. That's the Nancy no one knew. And now you do. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue the conversation there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2 hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie?
hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.